You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Rewind the dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums.
Here we are to chat about the Blood and Guts edition of Dynamite. We have lived through 2.5 hours of what was a PSA for blood donation.
It's something like that.
Yeah. I think several of these candidates are ones for the need for blood transfer. Probably.
Yes. I'm sure Kyle O'Reilly will be accepting along with Sky Blue right now. Yes.
Oh my God. Yes. All that to come. If you are just tuning in, welcome here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. I know you have already subscribed to the channel, so I'm not even going to remind you about that. But if you want to be a real one, then sign up to the Post Wrestling Cafe, where you get the XL version of Rewind to Dynamite. We just went through all of the news from today, including, you know how difficult this is going to be for Toronto media to now be aware of Mark Shapiro and Mark Shapiro?
I'm having trouble already. Yes.
Well, wow. There's a new Shapiro in town, folks, because the WWE is now in business with Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment.
We're global and we're young and we're shareable.
That they are. And they're going to be sharing all their content, all their merch, and it'll all come with a cost. Mm-hmm. Plus, we go through NXT from Tuesday night, the return of Obafemi, the rechristening of the speed division, led now by Jasper, and going through the Gold Rush week 1 and 2 cards coming up in New York City. The return of TNA. Season premiere on Thursday night.
An unofficial one, but yes, after a 4-week hiatus.
Mm-hmm. That's it. After a cool down period after Bound for Glory. And then also a discussion on Eddie Guerrero, because by the time most people are listening to this, it is the 20th anniversary of his passing on November 13th, 2005. So talking a bit about that night when Way and I were both working, and the memories of Eddie Guerrero, who yes, passed away 20 years ago. So all of that can be found on the XL version of Rewind to Dynamite. We're going to be back on Thursday. Ask Away Mailbag Show. Your questions have been coming in fast and furious. You still have some time to get them in at forum.postwrestling.com. This is always a popular show each month when we do the mailbag, and we will be answering all questions available to cafe members sometime Thursday afternoon.
Yep, it's your right as a Post Wrestling Cafe patron. So go to forum.postwrestling.com, make sure you're signed in with your Patreon account, and leave us a question.
And then just looking ahead to this weekend, we will have a Rewind to SmackDown with Way and Neil Flanagan. I'll be doing a show covering TNA's Turning Point. We will see what else fills out this card. We are currently at one match. Maybe it will just be a lengthy one. And then Saturday, we have Collision Course with Kate from Montreal and Bruce Lord. Sunday, UFC 322 show with myself and Eric Marcotte. And Sunday night, it is time for the NWA podcast.
Mm-hmm.
They're back, they're pumped, and they're ready to go all night long. So tune in Sunday night here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel for Nate and company, as they will be breaking down the entire industry as only they can.
As always, a lot to talk about, I'm sure.
We have a lot to talk about on tonight's show from Greensboro, North Carolina, the site of Sting's retirement match.
The site of many things, but yes, something we just reviewed. Yes, Sting's retirement. Mm-hmm.
4,863 was the last number from WrestleTix. That would make it one of their biggest TV audiences of the year. So excluding pay-per-views, they did have the TV taping in Scotland earlier this year. But this would be on like the high end of TV attendances this year. And they are not wasting any time. For all we thought about three matches being announced, that is what was presented. Three matches over the course of 2.5 hours, where the intermission was an angle that they did. They did an interview segment that was pretty much the only thing that broke up the wrestling on this show. Justin Roberts introduces us. We are kicking off with the women's Blood and Guts affair. Two women will start, and then, quote, every few minutes, a new member enters. I'm glad they didn't attach a number here, because these entries throughout both matches were all over the place, because they were not going to introduce people during commercial breaks. And so we had some that were very quick in succession and others that were lengthy.
I appreciate that they're not trying to bullshit us by like coming up with like an approximate number, because realistically, outside of wrestling podcasters, like, who really is timing these matches? So they could probably get away by saying like every 3 minutes. But I think this is like the type of stickler for like details that like Tony Khan is. We're talking about the guy who like tries to still give an excuse for the invisible camera at every opportunity. So you're better off just saying at a random interval, like he does for the Casino Gauntlet.
Whenever we goddamn feel like it, there will be a new entrant in the match.
I'm not complaining. Worked out great.
So we have 6-on-6, and it starts off with a 5-minute period involving Sky Blue, who would become Sky Red in record time, and Willow Nightingale. And they're fighting across the two rings, and after being sent into, there was a slingshot powerbomb and a pounce by Willow, and I don't know, way within 90 seconds, Sky Blue has just torn up her forehead and she just begins bleeding. And that would be the case for the next 46 minutes that she would be wearing the proverbial crimson mask. This was an ungodly sight. Flagged for this on Blue Sky. You would think that if ever there was a performer Blue Sky would be partial to, it would be Sky Blue.
I'm almost positive this video is about to get demonetized, but I mean, I have to show these visuals. So like and subscribe, okay? We're probably not making any money on this particular one, but look at this. I mean, it's almost like, listen, you have to live up to the name of the match, right? So more importantly, like it or not, this is the thing that will separate this particular match, these particular matches, from WWE's War Games, which is coming up later on this month. So what was the spot exactly that lacerated her?
Like, I think she was just run into the fence. Like, it wasn't even like a spectacular big like maneuver or a weapons shot. Like, I think she was just thrown into the fence, and that's how this began.
Like, if that is the case, and we could be wrong, like I haven't rewatched that particular moment, but like, that is kind of ridiculous. I would have liked for the spot to feel a little bit bigger to justify something this much, but listen, I guess cuts are somewhat unpredictable. This was like a horror movie scene. Yeah,
but still, like, look at how she like cleared out the eyesight. I mean, perfect. It was like she was wearing goggles here when she got blood splatter all over her. I mean, this was a very professional looking mask that she was wearing. Mm-hmm. Third in is Julia Hart. So the heels have the advantage here, and man, did they have to play with this whole numbers thing with the men's match, where the babyface is technically at the numbers advantage, but would sell for like 90% of the match. So in this one, much more straightforward. I even like the fact that as soon as Julia Hart enters, Shivani really put over the significance of winning these advantage matches. And the Sisters of Sin, they start searching for something inside of the turnbuckle. I don't think they ever came up with anything when they were searching for whatever this mysterious weapon was. So somewhere there's like a loaded handgun in one of these corners as they're taking down the ring, I assume. Harley Cameron is in fourth, And so what we have here is a preview of one of the semifinal matches with the Sisters of Sin against Willow and Harley Cameron. And I will say, to a lesser extent, this example, but more so for the closing portion, they made these semifinal matches feel so much bigger coming out of this that I thought they did a really great job of elevating this tournament by having the participants sectioned off with each other. Tekla is in fifth and starts whipping everyone with a leather belt. This was very much of the same WWE War Games format where every new participant brought with them a weapon of choice, minus Christopher Walken. Jamie Hayter is in sixth. She's brought a bag of tacks, which is just casually mentioned that she has brought in, and then goes right to a kendo stick as Shivani remarks that she's ripping the skin off the backs of the Triangle of Madness, to his horror. Megan Bain is seventh with Penelope Ford, who comes out in her outfit with wings, which make up for her injured wing that she's dealing with.
Kind of, yeah, yeah. I mean, you have to feel for her. Queen Aminata was there as well. So
Queen Aminata was there, yes, for about like 10 seconds on camera in a neck brace.
Well, they just wanted to... I'm sure everybody feels bad for both Aminata and also for Penelope for being so involved in the build to all of this and not being able to participate. So it almost felt just like a way of saying, hey, please show up anyway. You probably had a costume made for this. Well, you get to use it at least.
So... they also mentioned the fact that Megan Bain has just come back from Japan, where she is going back and forth as part of the Goddesses Tag League for Stardom. So she is in the midst of that. That's going to be quite the month for her. Eighth is Chris Statlander. And I guess as we're getting down to the final participants here, we got to get a little creative with the weapons. She brought a pool cue into the ring. And this is when Aminata appears and offsets Penelope Ford. They head to the back. And Statlander and Willow, they have a moment where they're kind of playing off their past problems and trying to get along. Cameron starts climbing up the metal truss inside the ring and then turns that into a high cross. Megan Bain is bleeding at this point. Mercedes is ninth, and she was very popular. Tons of CEO chants, and she's got all her belts displayed on a table on the floor. And she would turn this Wednesday Night Fever into this beautiful tornado DDT to Statlander on top of her belt and poses with it, and then grabs all of her belts and hands them to her teammates to use as weapons with plenty to spare as well.
I love this. I love this. I mean, I'm sure all these little indie promotions that are like just trying to spot their logos. And I just love the idea of Mercedes using, well, I guess six of her championships as weapons in the Blood Guts match.
Everyone could have two belts here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mina Shirakawa is in 10th. She's got the barbed wire bat. Marina Shafir is 11th, and she comes out and just drags the bloody Chris Statlander out of the ring, and she has booby-trapped the side of the barricade that is just containing a bed of nails. And I guess this bed of nails was just not going to fit naturally into the ring. My only complaint is that I think this would have been a more of a spectacle if this nails was done in the middle of the ring so everyone in the arena could see it. But Statlander takes a back bump onto the bed of nails and just like lay there for an indeterminate amount of time before she returned to the match.
I'm sure it would have been awkward to bring in there as well, but I thought the effect was perfectly strong, you know, by doing this for most of the people that are watching, which are at home. Yeah.
Timeless Toni Storm is out 12th, and she is out with her pearl necklaces, and Excalibur is able to note that there will be no pearl clutching tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Even the mothers out there that could stop this.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So Storm tapes up her fist and she places the broken champagne bottle glass over the fist. And we've got a Taipei death match here as she starts waffling them with taped fists with glass. And at this point, everyone is in. So the match officially begins with the bell ringing. And we proceed to just see, man, everyone is bleeding here. Some of which I don't even know what the spots were. Like Marina Shafir just suddenly is dripping blood. Don't know where it occurred, but it was just, there was a lot of blood in this match. Mercedes kisses Toni Storm, setting her up for a moneymaker. Harley pulls out the puppet, and Mercedes tosses the puppet away. The crowd is sad, but Harley has brass knuckles underneath and drills Monet with it. Julie and Tekla then climb the truss, and they end up climbing through the side of this metal truss, which was incredible that they could get themselves out of this cage. And they pointed out the fact none of the men are going to be able to do this.
It was a great spot. I mean, so we've had women's blood and guts. Well, we had women's war games. But I mean, I think it takes this specific configuration or like this specific size and design of cage in order to do something like that. And surely this spot was not done. This cage was not created with this spot in mind, but you just happen to have two people that were small enough to be able to pull something like this off. And I thought it was absolutely brilliant because it gave them something that even the men wouldn't be able to do.
So they get out and they end up spearing the referee, taking the key to open the door. And then several of the baby faces are just violently throwing down the stairs and out of the ring. Monet and Statlander start to climb the truss from the floor, and Statlander uses a Samoan drop, putting Monet through the desk that contained all of her belts, and that pretty much took those two out of the match. Storm is using her shoe. She pours glass from the champagne bottle and DDT Shafir on it, and then pulls out a mirror, places the mirror onto Marina in the corner, and sets up for a hip attack, which is stopped by Shafir smashing the mirror into Toni Storm, meaning that somebody actually did take notes from the House of Torture with the usage of the black mirror here, and it made its way over to the United States. But we are not done yet, as Mina Shirakawa takes an aluminum bat and uses it to assist her with a figure four onto Megan Bain, and this is broken by Marina Shafir stomping her bare foot onto glass, taking her foot and stomping it onto Mina to break up the figure four. And the other women,
that was so awesome.
Yeah, it was a great, great spot.
So great.
So you've got the other three are on the floor. Mina and Toni are the baby faces left inside of the ring.
And they mentioned that I think the heels locked the cage. So
they locked, yes, because once they had the key. So you just have Storm and Mina in the ring. They are holding Toni down as Shafir applies mother's milk onto Shirakawa while Bane takes the belt and starts whipping Mina over and over until Toni has to scream and surrender at 46 minutes and 9 seconds, which again, this is the semifinal match of Marina and Megan Bain against Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa, which feels like a huge match now as the whole basis of this finish. I thought these 12 women just killed it in this match. I did not feel this length of time at all. I thought some of the creativity, it was 46 minutes. And I greatly enjoyed both of these matches for the fact that we were watching it on Triller. Cause I thought in particular, like this match, there was no stalling. There was no like dead time. I thought they all like, I thought this was the more creative of the two matches when it came to new things that you had never seen in these types of matches. And more importantly, I think you built up not just the two tag matches in the tournament, but you also elevated Mercedes and Chris Statlander for next weekend. I just thought that this was an excellent, excellent match.
I thought this match was a work of art. It was fantastic. AEW, like we know, does chaos really well. And that's always exemplified for any of their hardcore matches, like Stadium, Stampede, Anarchy in the Arena, previous Blood and Guts. This was really no different. Like, it's chaotic, but oddly very coordinated, you know, and there's an extra degree of difficulty when you're talking about TV breaks that are added to all of this as well. All of this, though, like just resulted in just such an entertaining 46 minutes of just like very violent, very creative. I don't even want to call them stunts because that almost sounds like, you know, I'm just like, I'm not appreciating the artistry.
They conveyed like a violent fight that they were having. Yeah. Like, it didn't feel, as much as we outlined all of this stuff, like it never had that sort of orchestrated feel of them just like performing stunts, for lack of a better term, and going from one manipulated sequence to another. Like, this was just a violent fight that they were all involved in, and you tried to really dial up the emotion for the ending with Toni Storm you know, surrendering because of Mina Shirakawa.
You want a little bit of mess, you know, to just convey something feeling a bit more authentic and organic. And I thought this just had the perfect amount. I mean, in the form of like the incredible amount of like blood that was shed here by all the participants. But a lot of great creative spots. I thought the mirror was awesome. I loved even the Mini Monet bit with the brass knuckles underneath, which, you know, me kind of turns Mini Monet into like a pretty devastating weapon, you know, like in the future if used in this scenario. Mm-hmm. It's not just a puppet, but with puppet with like that could knock somebody out. So I love that. I love the sneaking out of the cage from Tekla and Julie Hart. I thought that was just such a brilliant way of, they could escape the cage in any number of ways, but to do it this way, I just thought like felt totally unique to like what qualities make them feel special as smaller people in this cage. I really love the AEW War Games cage. Like, there's an extra area extending the apron to the sides so they could do spots on the sides. And it just kind of, like, by necessity, makes the cage even bigger and that much more impressive. So you built to some of the matches that are coming up in this tag tournament. You built to some long-term programs here with several people. But, God, I thought for me, like, the person who came across the best in all of this was Marina Shafir. I thought she looked so great. I mean, she already like carried, I think, such an aura about her as part of the Death Riders. And you could just tell like the years now of like playing this character, being next to Jon Moxley, have really rubbed off on her in ways that she can bring even to an in-ring performance. Cause she comes in here and the way she looked from the bit of nail spot to just like the mother's milk at the end to like stomping her foot on the glass to break the count, like she looks like a monster and she wrestles like a monster and a beast, and immediately to me feels like she's a top level, you know, a villain in the women's division. I definitely put her above Megan Bain. She might be the top right now in terms of just like credibility, you know. She was
well,
so
those
great.
Two, it's like they are like the Road Warriors of this women's tag division. Like I think you look at them as, you know, the, you know, there's the argument like of just putting the belts on like this unstoppable women's tag team to really establish these belts out of the gate.
You could, but honestly, I see bigger things for Shafir than even the tag team division. And like she to me is a world champion level act. And, you know, like they tease something here with Toni Storm, certainly with the finisher with Mina Shirakawa. I kind of feel like Storm and Shafir is the big match coming off of it. And I think that is something that I'm actually very interested to see. So this was just a fantastic, fantastic match.
It was great. I really, really enjoyed this, like this first hour of the show dedicated to this match.
It's November, which means holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds that you won't see anywhere else. Their thoughtful curation makes shopping simple. But heads up, popular gifts sell fast, so now's a great time to start crossing those names off of your list. Uncommon Goods offers high-quality, unique items, like the New York Times custom baseball book, a made-to-order collection of historic newspaper pages featuring your favorite team's biggest games, star players, and memorable moments straight from the Times archives. You can even personalize it with a name for that extra special touch. Perfect for that baseball fan who might still need a bit of cheering up from their team's heartbreaking World Series Game 7 loss. Uncommon Goods has something for every kind of person. Book lovers, history buffs, foodies, gardeners. Shopping there supports small makers crafting limited-run handcrafted products. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. For 15% off your next gift, head to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary. This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Rewind Away looks at some of the biggest retirement matches in wrestling history, featuring matches involving Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Sting, and Tam Nakano. Plus, John Pollock and Brandon from New Jersey get together to look back at season 4 of 90210, a season that brought you John Sears, Lucinda Nicholson, David's meth addiction, and Brandon moving in on Kelly Taylor. Book Club will cover This Book Is All Elite by Keith Elliott Greenberg. Plus, we have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322, and so much more. $6 gets you all this at postwrestlingcafe.com. We come back from break, and the Don Callis family has outnumbered the Jurassic Express outside. And by outnumbered, like, this is like 20% of the Don Callis family, beating down Jack Perry and Luchasaurus, and they're beaten down. Okada comes out of the trailer with the Young Bucks and Don Callis, and they're still trying to recruit the Young Bucks. And next week, they will have to make their decision because Kenny Omega is coming next week.
Yes, so we are going to get the decision next week, and most likely a proper Elite reunion.
Well, it's weird, right? Like, next week is the go-home show for a pay-per-view where they are on opposite sides. Omega and the Young Bucks.
Okay.
Well, so I think you have to prolong this at least past Full Gear.
Yes, right.
Because they do have to face each other at the pay-per-view.
Okay.
And then our intermission match, the greatest buffer match in the history of that term. Hangman Page and Powerhouse Hobbs, Falls Count Anywhere. Page has his ribs taped, and my favorite part early on was they go to the floor, and Hobbs runs Hangman into the front row with the barricade, and you just hear this kid off camera yell, "Holy shit!" It was amazing. I rewound it 3 times.
The family-friendly show. I believe Paige said that himself in one of the media interviews. I think his child was there. This is his kid's first wrestling show.
This would be the show to indoctrinate any young 4-year-old into orchestrated violence.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have quit the story the next day at school. So Paige, early on, he's got to use his flying ability to offset the power of Hobbs. So he's just springboarding all over the place and trying to take Hobbs off balance and eliminate the power disadvantage.
And he can use both rings.
And he used both rings. And the announcers were very smart to like clue in on that of utilizing both of the rings. So Hobbs catches him, and they will not call this the world's strongest slam anymore. At one point they call it the world's most dangerous slam. But it's the world's strongest slam. Everyone knows what we're talking about here. And he looks at Hangman, he grabs Hangman and hits him with the world's strongest slam on the desk and tells Tony Schiavone, "It's your fault." And then he yells at Hangman, "Did you pray to God today? Did you pray?"
Love this guy.
Oh, it made me think of like, had Taz been there. That was his line. Remember that line on Tough Enough?
No.
"If you don't believe in God, start."
Okay.
And then Schiavone, answering all the critics online, gives his explanation of why he went ahead with the Halloween ruse. He said, "Listen, when the world champion comes to you, I'm not trying to cause trouble, but I'm not going to say no to the champion, even though I knew it was going to cause problems." Listen, Tony is just, he shows up and he's not standing up to the most powerful guy in the company. He wants me to voice his fake promo. I'm going to lend my voice.
Plausible, sure.
You got a problem with that? Tough shit. So they get onto the desk. Hobbs like slipped here on the desk. I was worried many times for Powerhouse Hobbs in this match.
He fell into one of the holes where the monitors go.
Yeah. Yes. This is a guy that's had some health issues, and my God, was this guy testing the limits of his body in this match. And Paige back body drops Powerhouse Hobbs off the table. You have to see some of these spots. You cannot appreciate how big this guy is in Hobbs and what he was doing in this match. This back body drop alone was nuts.
And he landed straight on his ass from that height.
God.
With that weight. Yeah, so.
Like this guy, we're talking like a 350-pound man here that is working as though he's like a quarter of that weight. So then they go into the crowd where Paige cannot lift him for the deadeye because his back has been beaten on, sprints at Hobbs and gets a spine buster through a table, which is the first pin attempt of the match. And after kicking out, they escalate into the balcony on the bleachers. And Paige stops a World's Strongest Slam off the balcony. And Paige removes his boot, goes up several stairs, and runs at Hobbs, nailing him with the boot. And Hobbs flies off the balcony through an electrical table as the lights flicker. And
Electrical tables.
Oh, it's amazing how
always underneath these balconies,
the motherboard controlling the entire electricity in the building is all centered on this one table. And Hobbs is prone and left for the pin. 14 minutes and 8 seconds. My first observation, Hangman Page is the best brawler in the industry. Like these matches are his specialty, whether it's this Texas death match, anything that requires very little to liberal use of any kind of rule set. This man is just tremendous in these settings. Hobbs as well is like he's only several degrees below a Darby Allin when it comes to just total disregard for his body, because I thought this man was going to be surgery bound, like probably 5 different times in this match.
Well, we don't have the injury report yet, so
no.
Let's hope he's okay. But man, listen, this match, I on paper, this 3-match card, this certainly looked to be the least interesting of them. Because when I hear like Falls Count Anywhere matches, I don't immediately get so excited. It's not like a stipulation that I think has been treated with so much reverence and care over the years. I'm expecting like kendo sticks, like trash cans, you know, maybe like a garbage bin full of like papers, some comedy in the backstage area. I thought this would be the match that they would do like to, I don't know, clean up the ring for like between the two cage matches or something. This was not that. This was every bit as entertaining as, well, not maybe all the War Games matches, but like on the level, certainly, of the War Games matches. This was not one that you should just be fast-forwarding and skipping or going to the washroom for. It was...
People told me this was their favorite match on the show, I'm like, you can have that argument, absolutely. Like, this was fantastic. This was like a pay-per-view level type of match.
They asked the question, how do you compete with two multi-person steel cage matches? And the answer was by having a singles match where the two people can go anywhere, everywhere that the War Games participants couldn't. And that means everywhere outside of the boundaries of the ring, in the ring, outside on the balconies. They took full advantage of the stipulation, and it resulted in just, I think, a match that was entertaining in a completely different way that added a lot of variety to the show, but still a great amount of spectacle. There was a lot of risk taken in this match, like almost as much as some of these War Games matches. You know, Paige taking that World's Strongest Slam onto the steps, Hobbs, that back body drop landing on his ass, and of course that balcony fall. The explosions...
And of course that balcony fall.
Well, I mean, listen, like, I don't know how I feel about the explosion plus like the cardboard box painted like a steel crate. That might have been a little bit too much, but at the same time, who doesn't love a little bit of explosion like to their major bumps to end the match? Like at that point, I was just like having fun with it, and I just kind of appreciated it for that. So I think Hobbs is just like really turned into a really well-rounded performer, great in ring, like plays a monster really well. And I think is so charismatic, like these moments in between the match where he's yelling, "Did you pray to God today?" So, you keep wondering when he will take that next step, but I mean, he feels very, very ready, you know?
He does. He does. I hope he like just picks his spots, because this is the type of match, like, ooh, when it's a big deal, like, yeah, go all out. But you, like, I watch this guy and it's like, man, he is like, it's a very high bar of being in these types of matches. And it's, you know, that goes across the board. But you're talking someone of this size that is just doing stuff that is, you know, there's a toll that comes with that.
I'm very curious to know. I don't know when his contract ends, but like once it does, so how old is he? How old is Hobbs? Will Hobbs. 1991. So that would make him 34. I mean, that's still 34. Pretty relatively young by modern standards. I could definitely see a lot of interest. And you know, I hope this guy gets his money if that's the case.
So Paige goes back ringside and gets jumped by Joe and Shibata and is attacked with chair shots. They call for the cage to be lowered. And We don't know who was lowering the cage. Wasn't Tony Schiavone. And Eddie Kingston and Hook run out as the ops exit. Big chant for Eddie Kingston. And then Paige says, if you wanted me in a cage match, you can have it at Full Gear. And Joe got freaked out by this. He was like prime Ric Flair here reacting to this news. But we will have a cage match with Paige in a cage.
Paige in a cage, that's right. Yep. So on a show with a cage match, they also announced another cage match. I mean, it feels like a worthwhile stipulation for second in a series. And I'm sure it'll promise to be pretty violent as well. Yeah.
Schiavone is in the ring and refers to now the former Greensboro Coliseum as the best venue in the world. And he introduces Ricky Steamboat. Steamboat comes out. Tony talks about seeing this guy win the tag titles with Paul Jones in 1978, the final conflict in 83, and then winning the tag belts here on TBS with Dustin Rhodes in 1991. First of all, Steamboat thanks TBS for broadcasting this so everyone can see this. Thank you, TBS. He mentions how Ric Flair was his nemesis, but I came to Mid-Atlantic in 1977. I was 16 months into my career, but before he can get his story going, FTR interrupt. And he comes out, and first Steamboat puts over Dax Harwood, but then he is stopped by Big Stoke, and Stoke got so much heat here. This was almost like top Dominic level heat. And he plugs Full Gear and the tag title match and said that it would be his privilege to have the greatest wrestler ever be at Full Gear in the front row, but then says, do you have Macho Man's number? I haven't seen him on TikTok in a minute.
Yes.
I thought this was all leading to Steamboat making a no-hose joke towards Big Stoke, but we didn't get that line from him. Cash then brings up the fact they were part of Steamboat's retirement match, and we are miracle workers trying to make Ricky look like a shell of his former self. And then Dax takes over because he was trained by Ricky, but he taught me nothing. But one thing you did tell me was to save my money. But if it wasn't, if only you and Flair took your own advice, you wouldn't have to be here tonight, which we never did see Ric Flair here.
Not at all. Like, he was advertised, announced on Saturday, and
then brought up here. I thought for sure he was doing something in this segment.
I thought he was going to run in. So, yeah, I mean, Kate and I were talking about this. I mean, so Flair, we last saw, what, for the Sting thing?
I guess probably at the same venue. Building. I don't think he's been back since.
Yeah, I don't even know.
You know what? He did the Mongo tribute over You're the
right.
summer.
You're right. Yeah, I don't know why he wasn't here. Yeah.
So that was strange. Dax claims he's a bigger legend than Steamboat ever was. And for a second, it's 1983 and Ricky goes nose to nose with Dax. And he then steps down, says, you know what? I'm about to be 73. I'm going to be the smarter man and walk away. When FTR attacks Steamboat and out to run is Brodito, who have they've been biting their lip for the last 5 minutes, but now it's getting physical. It's time for us to interject. And out they come, 21 plex to Cash, and Steamboat gets into it, attacking Dax. Place goes wild, and Cash pulls Dax away, and Ricky's music plays. And by the end of this, I think we get Brodito with a new dragon going for the trios belts. I think that's the play here, right?
Oh, okay. Yes. I mean, you can never have too many comebacks, all right? A comeback per decade of life. He's in his 70s, so why not? I think it's time.
I'm always going to enjoy Ricky Steamboat in these segments. I mean, the guy is, you know, it was like 15 years ago. He had that just horrific deal after the Nexus attack. It's great that he can just get up here and just do like a promo like this and still has some of that like charisma to pull things off and fire up for stuff. But I enjoyed this segment, and it was done in service of, you know, promoting this tag title match that I've got to say, I think they've done a pretty good job of trying to build up FTR for this tag title match to make this feel like a big, big match for the pay-per-view.
100%. Yeah. Even this segment, I thought was great. Like, the last match that we thought was going to be a filler turned out to be outstanding. Even this talking segment, which was definitely the filler and the come down segment, even this I thought was tremendously entertaining. I mean, I think Steamboat at 72 still has incredible intensity and is still able to convincingly play like that babyface character that he's always played, even now. So I was very entertained, and I thought it made Brodito look like major stars coming out of it. So I'm seeing that Ric Flair did appear for a live segment.
Okay.
In arena, but was unable to do the segment for some reason. So.
All right. Okay.
Yeah. I'm seeing it here. It might be an injury related, but I just haven't necessarily confirmed.
Injury related. Yeah. Okay. Well, there was some story there, but he was there at the Coliseum.
Mm-hmm. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Hello. Braden Harrington here from Up Next. You can catch us live every Tuesday here at Post Wrestling as we cover NXT. But if you search Poison Rana in your YouTube or podcast app or social media of choice, you can check out all the other wrestling content that we create, podcasts, and so much more. Visit PoisonRana.ca and keep it lit.
Main event, it is the men's blood and guts match. So, Death Riders against the Conglomeration with Roderick Strong and Darby Allin. So Darby and Wheeler start off the match in the 5-minute period. And this time it is Yuta getting his forehead cut open with tacks on the skateboard. I don't know, on a scale of a 1 to Sky Blue, I would say Yuta was what, a good like 5 to 6 here?
Sure. Something like that. Yeah.
Okay. The scale was going to be broken later. Okay. Spoiler. Orange Cassidy is third, and he bends his sunglasses to use as weapons. And at one point, Orange Cassidy goes for a cover and is informed, no, that's not how this works. Fourth is Daniel Garcia, who came out in what I can best describe was a COVID mask.
A face mask. Yeah.
It looked very, surgical mask in
surgical mask
design. Okay.
It wasn't.
Well, depending on in certain parts of the country, that will be a heel tactic.
Well, there's a lot of blood in this match. You know, a lot of
It came right off as soon as he got in. He was just
he was prepared at least, okay?
Okay. So
he's only a Death Rider name, all right? He's actually a very safe.
The cautious riders.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They wear helmets. So the Death Riders had the number. They were at the, the baby faces were at the numbers disadvantage in this. Sorry, I have this all wrong. The baby faces had the numbers advantage in this match. Mm-hmm. So Garcia and Yuta worked together as a tag team here against Cassidy and Darby Allin. And then the fifth entrant is supposed to be Mark Briscoe. But we go to the back and he's been laid out in his locker room, and Roderick Strong comes out in his place. So more to come on Mark Briscoe. Then it's Claudio Castagnoli, the veteran of this match. This is his third blood and guts match. And he delivered this giant swing to Darby while having Orange Cassidy on his back. I mean, just something else. And then he military presses Darby from one ring to the next. Roderick has gotten busted open after a chair shot, and seventh is Kyle O'Reilly. Now, I didn't know if Kyle O'Reilly was necessarily going to be the star of this match, but there's an old saying of leave it all in the ring. This man left it all in the ring. There was nothing left of this man to walk to the back.
50% of him was left on this canvas. Yes.
Yes. A portion of him will always be remembered in Greensboro. So Claudio wraps a chain around his arm. The Death Riders are in control, despite being at the numbers disadvantage here. And Claudio military presses Darby and Orange Cassidy into the cage. Eighth out is John Moxley, and he has brought a fork. And this would turn out to be the most devastating weapon of the entire match, because he just goes on a stabbing spree to Kyle, who shoots in for the single leg and gets stabbed with the fork, which is one of the... That's a rookie mistake for any young grapplers out there. You always defend for the fork, okay?
Yes, 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 of course.
Always got to be ready for that, mm-hmm. okay? That's what got Hodger near the end of his grappling career. So then he just stabs Kyle, more to come on him. Then he stabs Darby in the back and just grinds this fork down the back of Darby. We cut to Kyle, who looks like he's I don't know what to say. Like, this guy is a horror film extra at the corner, because he is so bloody and has lost inordinate amounts of blood at this point. It was insane how much blood this man had deposited here in the ring. Ninth is supposed to be Mark Briscoe, but Renee says he's being tended to. It will now be a 5-on-4 match. So they continue to beat down the baby faces. Kyle tries
to... It was just amusing hearing Renee like give us this like super professional report while her husband was stabbing the shit out of Kyle O'Reilly with the fork.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, you know, that's just how things go. I think they've just given up on kind of having any connectivity.
That's the relationship.
Two.
We don't judge.
Yes.
It's all good. Yeah.
And then once a year, they have a drive and they film it and Renee lets everything out.
Yes.
So Kyle tries to fight back despite the blood loss. I don't know if this man was legit delirious or else his selling was just impeccable here, because he looked like he was a man that was about to pass out. Claudio applies the sharpshooter onto O'Reilly, but Darby scales the top of the cage, drops down onto everyone with a coffin drop, breaking it up. And then Pac is the 10th man out, starting the official match, which prompts Mark Briscoe, the smartest man in this match, to have let them kill each other for 40 minutes and then I'll come out. So he comes out with bolt cutters and a toolbox and puts Daniel Garcia onto a table on the floor, and Briscoe climbs on top of the cage. But Garcia rolls off. So Yuta meets Briscoe up there, and these two would spend like a long amount of time on top of this cage. But Briscoe has a plan. He's got a rope attached to a carabiner that he descends to the floor, hooks up the chairs, and brings them up to the top of the cage. And so we had chairs on top of the cage.
This is pretty impressive, because like he hit... he brought the chairs up to like one of the sort of like trusses that actually protruded beyond the fence itself. So we were all waiting to see whether or not he would actually be able to complete this, and he was able to pluck it out and successfully brought
it. Yeah, they cut away because they felt it's like, oh, this is going to look embarrassing. And then we cut back and he had gotten them through. So man does not wilt under pressure. And
all this after the Don Callis family attack as well.
I mean, the remarkable recuperative skills. Garcia uses a wrench on Kyle's ear, then chokes him with a chain. Like, this was the passion of the Kyle. Briscoe hits a J driller to Yuta on the top of the cage and then just calmly climbs down the cage. I was all for this. I was like, we don't need a man being thrown off here. Then Gabe Kidd appears and he has brought a taser. Tases Darby and they take him to the stage with Pac, and he is sent off of the tunnel through a flaming table that Gabe has lit. And that was the end of Darby, who just burned to the back.
We obviously didn't get it in the other Moxley match, but we're not in Kansas anymore.
I liked it. So that's the end of Darby. And then we have a bulldog choke applied to Kyle as the man is just bleeding profusely, gives the middle finger, so they put a chair around his neck. Orange Cassidy has had his hands stapled inside of his pockets, rips out the hands, and fights back. And at this point, like, my only criticism, and this it really isn't a criticism because it all worked in the end, it was just like the heat was, I'm not exaggerating, like a half an hour of heat for the Death Riders, just destroying these guys and so little comeback for them. But all of a sudden, Orange Cassidy comes to life and he fires off these orange punches. And then Kyle gets a transfusion from somebody ringside and he gets his power back and he starts going after everyone. He's got the ankle lock applied to Moxley. they put everyone through tables and the crowd erupts at this point. They are so into this babyface comeback. Moxley counters Kyle's ankle lock to a bulldog choke. Kyle goes to the armbar, transitions back to the ankle lock, and this is the signal that these matches on TV have totally made Kyle believable, because this crowd was so ready to explode. And then with this ankle lock deep, all the Death Riders are out. Moxley has the look of fear on his face as he has to tap out, and this place exploded. 54 minutes and 8 seconds, this blood guts match goes, and it ends with just a gigantic pop, and Kyle O'Reilly is the future of the industry.
Incredible. When this match ended, first of all, I was actually jumping up and down. And as like somebody who watches as much wrestling as I do, like, that's just, I don't lose myself in two matches like this that often anymore. So it takes a really special match for me to like actually react that way. I was so happy for everybody involved, not just in this match, but in this entire company, because they stuck the landing on this incredible match that I think is already immediately among my top matches of the year. But this entire company stuck the landing on, I thought, one of the best editions of Dynamite that I've ever seen. Top to bottom, everything was just outstanding, and they peaked with the best stuff. What a great match. And I just felt like, man, the booking was brilliant. Like, you had, so this was a very unique match in that, I mean, you had the baby faces win the advantage. They won the coin. Well, they won the advantage matches, right? So they started off with the advantage, and they used it to basically have Wheeler Yuta get beaten up for like a good 10 minutes. And that was tremendously entertaining. But eventually, when they actually wanted to, you know, like, build to the comeback, they did it thanks to like, not just the Mark Briscoe, Don Callis family attack. They kind of just did it through Claudio Castagnoli and just how awesome Claudio Castagnoli was. Because the moment that the Death Riders actually took over, it was actually a fair fight. Like, Roderick Strong had taken Briscoe's place. But because Claudio is so dominant, he gave the advantage to the heels, even when they lost the advantage match. So I love that. And then, like, when the Briscoe stuff finally comes into play during the match beyond, like, it leaves the heels with an even greater advantage, because they're already beating the shit out of people. Then you have Moxley come in. Then you have Pac come in. So now you have a six-on-five advantage. In the match beyond, like, when pinfalls actually matter. So, like, the baby faces are, like, super, super down. And then, of course, when Briscoe comes back, I mean, it adds a level of, like, spectacle to this. He does all that stuff on top of the cage with Yuta, which I thought was awesome. I thought Moxley continues to just be amazing in this match, in this entire, like, year, really. He brought, like, so much intensity with that fork. His entire story, I think, has just been so good. All those matches he had with Kyle O'Reilly, in the Roderick Strong match he had, this great storytelling that they did with him as, like, the leader of the Death Riders, who was starting to, like, crumble, built into this story really, really well. And it started with him coming out fourth instead of five. I'm mixing the numbers with the women, but he came out fourth instead of five, which, you know, the announcers were bringing up, and which I think to us speaks that the Death Riders are losing confidence in him as the closer. They are instead, you know, choosing to use Pac in that position. So I think that already says a lot, and we'll continue to see the fallout of this maybe as soon as next Wednesday or even Saturday. I love the fact that Pac was the final man, because it already, like, shows that, hey, like, when Moxley is out of here, Pac is going to be the guy. He's going to be the new leader. He's going to be the person who actually can get shit done. And the stunts were insane. Darby going through the flaming table, just everything they did. Creatively, it was incredibly satisfying. In terms of violence, it was incredibly satisfying. In terms of story, like, the, you know, I was concerned after Strong got that win that they were going to take away focus from Kyle and that it would just be like a Jon Moxley losing story. Well, Kyle O'Reilly felt like the main character coming out of this match, and they put the spotlight on him brilliantly through the weeks of build leading up to this one moment. It's just satisfied everything. This was one of my favorite matches of the year.
How did you feel they balanced it? Like, going in, doing two blood and guts matches on the same show. Like, what was your thought going in, and how did you feel they pulled that off? Because this is a little different than like a WWE pay-per-view where they have made like two elimination chambers or two of the same match type, like War Games, for instance.
I thought it resulted in one of the best episodes of Dynamite I've ever seen. That's what. Like, I mean, Like WWE has been able to do this for their product, but like the fact that this was only three matches, all three of them excellent. And even a talking segment that I thought was very well done. There was no filler in this show whatsoever. This crowd was up the entire time. I was up the entire time. I'm talking about a 2.5 hour show plus 2 hours 40 really is what it was. The entire thing was great. I thought there was enough variation between the men's and the women's blood and guts matches too, that like neither felt like they were repeating anything. Like creatively, I was just blown away really by the both of them.
This will sound crazy. By the time this show ended, I thought to myself, I would have been so satisfied if this had been the pay-per-view they had given me.
Yes.
These three matches, like me as a fan, like I'm not concerned about getting to see every last member of this roster on a 6-hour show. Like I would have been like, if I spent $50 on tonight's show and it was full gear, I would have left so satisfied. I don't think there's a person in this building that would have been, you could have stretched this to 3 hours easily. You could have, okay, make it a 4-match show. Like I thought this was like, again, this is probably going to be among people. Like to me, it's this show and the Arena Mexico as like the best AEW shows of the year. And this one just had a level of, like so much of the Mexico show was just the atmosphere and many factors. This one was just like, this was just a stellar show from all facets. And I mean, we are coming back. They announced by the end for Collision, we have Mark Briscoe against Mark Davis. And then next week we have a 3-hour Dynamite with Hangman against Shibata and the return of Kenny Omega, and then Full Gear.
They announced this online?
No, this was all in like the lower third, like in the final portion of the show.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah.
I think
Briscoe and Mark Davis was imperative to relay to everyone, but you literally have one match announcement for Saturday and 3 hours next week. I'm good until full gear. Like after tonight,
we're kind of used to it. Like you just hope that they have enough content, you know, to justify the 3 hours. Like for this 2-hour, 40-minute show, they had more.
Well, you could have a lot of matches coming out of these two. Like you could go to Darby and Gabe Kidd. You could do another Moxley Kyle match. Like think of how big that match feels now to go to with something on the line, something of significance. So, yeah, hopefully they can like get a lot of that out over. Like, I would want a lot of those big matches announced Saturday at Collision, so you can really hammer them next Wednesday on the show, because then they're going right into the pay per view next weekend. But
I think Fallout with the Death Riders and specifically Moxley now causing this team to lose, that should be one of the main things that they should promote. You know, like because at this point we're all expecting the group to turn on Moxley, so that would be a big moment if it is what they're doing.
So we got lots of feedback to this show. So we're going to say goodbye to everyone on YouTube, but we're going to continue the conversation on the Post Wrestling Cafe for all XL members. We thank everyone for tuning in. You always will get our reviews of Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown here on the YouTube channel. Way will be back Friday evening with Neil Flanagan. And again, a reminder that Thursday for Cafe members, we're dropping the Ask Away mailbag show. So we will say farewell to all of you on YouTube.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.